Over NBC's Coast to Coast network of independent affiliated stations, the University of Chicago Roundtable. Today, the University of Chicago has the honor of bringing you an unusual program of poetry by T.S. Eliot, read and discussed by Mr. T.S. Eliot. To introduce Mr. Eliot, we now present Mr. Morton Dowen Zabel, Professor of English of the University of Chicago. Mr. Zabel.
For the past 6 weeks, the University of Chicago, under the auspices of its Committee on Social Thought and its Alexander White Professorship, has had the honor to have as its guest Mr. T.S. Eliot. Mr. Eliot requires no introduction to the radio audience of this round table. For 35 years since the appearance of his first notable poem, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, in 1915, he has been preeminent among the poets, critics, and moral intelligences of our time. His poem of 1922, The Wasteland, has probably exerted a greater influence on the thought and art of modern verse than any other poem of the age. Other works, Gerontion, The Sweeney Poems, The Hollow Men, Ash Wednesday, and more recently, The Four Quartets, have stamped the contemporary imagination and conscience with an indelible impression, an ineffaceable accent and imagery. His critical essays have been a continuous schooling and challenge in literary and moral thought to their readers. Books of inquiry, like The Idea of a Christian Society and Notes Towards the Definition of Culture, have proposed some of the most serious questions and defined some of the most pressing issues that concern modern society. His plays in verse, The Rock, Murder in the Cathedral, The Family Reunion, and The Cocktail Party, have done more to restore poetry to the modern theater than any work of their kind since Yeats and the Irish dramatists began their labors half a century ago. It is a privilege for the University of Chicago Round Table to devote its half hour today to a reading of his poems by T.S. Eliot, poet, critic, dramatist, member of England's Order of Merit, recipient of the Nobel Prize for Literature, eminent both as an American and as a European, and one of the most distinguished artists of the 20th century, Mr. Eliot.
I think this is the first time I've ever read any of my own poems over the radio for either an American or an English audience, though I've done so once or twice for overseas services. In making a choice for today, I've aimed first to select something representative of each of my main periods, and second, to choose complete poems rather than parts of longer poems. I've made one exception. People always expect from me at least a part of The Wasteland, so I shall give you the last two sections. I shall start with Four Preludes, which are almost the earliest of my published verse, now over 40 years old. While they are probably not those of my early poems which showed the most promise, I think they are still the most satisfactory to myself. The winter evening settles down with smell of steaks in passageways. 6 o'clock, the burnt-out ends of smoky days. And now a gusty shower wraps the grimy scraps of withered leaves about your feet, and newspapers from vacant lots. The showers beat on broken blinds and chimney pots, and at the corner of the street a lonely cab horse steams and stamps, and then the lighting of the lamps. The morning comes to consciousness of faint stale smells of beer from the sawdust-trampled street with all its muddy feet that press to early coffee stands. With the other masquerades that time resumes, one thinks of all the hands that are raising dingy shades in 1,000 furnished rooms. You tossed a blanket from the bed. You lay upon your back and waited. You dozed and watched the night revealing 1,000 sordid images of which your soul was constituted. They flickered against the ceiling. And when all the world came back and the light crept up between the shutters and you heard the sparrows in the gutters, you had such a vision of the street as the street hardly understands, sitting along the bed's edge where you curled the papers from your hair, or clasped the yellow soles of feet in the palms of both soiled hands. His soul stretched tight across the skies that fade behind a city block or trampled by insistent feet at 4 and 5 and 6 o'clock, and short square fingers stuffing pipes, and evening newspapers and eyes assured of certain certainties, the conscience of a blackened street impatient to assume the world. I am moved by fancies that are curled around these images and cling, the notion of some infinitely gentle, infinitely suffering thing. Wipe your hand across your mouth and laugh. The worlds revolve like ancient women, gathering fuel in vacant lots. There is one other of my early poems, written a year or two later, which was the most popular in its time, I suppose because it seemed to people more like poetry than my other work. But there may still be some who have a liking for it. That is La Figlia che Piange. Stand on the highest pavement of the stair, lean on a garden urn. Weave, weave the sunlight in your hair. Clasp your flowers to you with a pained surprise. Fling them to the ground and turn with a fugitive resentment in your eyes. But weave, weave the sunlight in your hair. So I would have had him leave, so I would have had her stand and grieve, so he would have left. As the soul leaves the body torn and bruised, as the mind deserts the body it has used, I should find some way incomparably light and deft, some way we both should understand, simple and faithless as a smile and shake of the hand. She turned away, but with the autumn weather compelled my imagination many days and many hours, her hair over her arms and her arms full of flowers. And I wonder how they should have been together. I should have lost a gesture and a pose. Sometimes these cogitations still amaze the troubled midnight and the noon's repose. Now I shall go straight on to the fourth and fifth section of the wasteland. And I don't think there is anything nowadays to say about that, except that, like some other poems, many readers find it easier to read to themselves after they've heard it read aloud. Death by Water. Phlebas the Phoenician, a fortnight dead, forgot the cry of gulls and the deep sea swell and the profit and loss. A current under sea picked his bones in whispers. As he rose and fell, he passed the stages of his age and youth, entering the whirlpool. Gentile or Jew, O you who turn the wheel and look to windward, consider Phlebas, who was once handsome and tall as you. What the thunder said. After the torchlight red on sweaty faces, after the frosty silence in the gardens, after the agony in stony places, the shouting and the crying, prison and palace and reverberation of thunder of spring over distant mountains. He who was living is now dead. We who were living are now dying with a little patience. Here is no water but only rock, rock and no water, and the sandy road, the road winding above among the mountains, which are mountains of rock without water. If there were water, we should stop and drink. Amongst the rock one cannot stop or think. Sweat is dry and feet are in the sand. If there were only water amongst the rock, dead mountain mouth of carious teeth that cannot spit. Here one can neither stand, nor lie, nor sit. There is not even silence in the mountains, but dry, sterile thunder without rain. There is not even solitude in the mountains, but red, sullen faces sneer and snarl from doors of mud-cracked houses. If there were water and no rock, if there were rock and also water and water, a spring, a pool among the rock, if there were the sound of water only, not the cicada and dry grass singing, but sound of water over a rock, where the hermit thrush sings in the pine trees, drip, drop, drip, drop, 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 but there is no water. Who is the third who walks always beside you? When I count, there are only you and I together, but when I look ahead up the white road, there is always another one walking beside you, gliding wrapped in a brown mantle, hooded. I do not know whether a man or a woman. But who is that on the other side of you? What is that sound? High in the air, murmur of maternal lamentation. Who are those hooded hordes swarming over endless plains, stumbling in cracked earth ringed by the flat horizon only? What is the city over the mountains? Cracks and reforms and bursts in the violet air. Falling towers, Jerusalem, Athens, Alexandria, Vienna, London. Unreal. A woman drew her long black hair out tight and fiddled whisper music on those strings. And bats with baby faces in the violet light whistled and beat their wings and crawled head downward down a blackened wall and upside down in air where towers tolling reminiscent bells that kept the hours and voices singing out of empty cisterns and exhausted wells. In this decayed hole among the mountains, in the faint moonlight, the grass is singing over the tumbled graves about the chapel. There is the empty chapel, only the wind's home. It has no windows, and the door swings. Dry bones can harm no one. Only a cock stood on the roof tree, cuckoo-rico, cuckoo-rico, in a flash of lightning. Then a damp gust bringing rain. Ganga was sunken, and the limp leaves waited for rain while the black clouds gathered far distant over Himavant. The jungle crouched, humped in silence. Then spoke the thunder, "Da, Datta, what have we given, my friend? Blood shaking my heart, the awful daring of a moment's surrender which an age of prudence can never retract. By this and this only, we have existed, which is not to be found in our obituaries, or in memories draped by the beneficent spider, or under seals broken by the lean solicitor in our empty rooms. Da, Diatham, I have heard the key. Turn in the door once and turn once only. We think of the key, each in his prison. Thinking of the key, each confirms a prison. Only at nightfall, ethereal rumors revive for a moment a broken Coriolanus. Da, Damyata. The boat responded gaily to the hand expert with sail and oar. The sea was calm. Your heart would have responded gaily when invited, beating obedient to controlling hands. I sat upon the shore, fishing, with the arid plain behind me. Shall I at least set my lands in order? London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. Poi se scosi nel fuoco che gli affina. Quando fiammuti Caledon, O swallow, swallow, le prince d'Aquitaine à la tour abolie. These fragments I have shored against my ruins. Why, then, I'll fit you. Hieronymo's mad again. Datta. Diatham. Damyata.